we start with some chanting?
Yasso Bhagavata Sama Sambuddho to the Blessed One, the Lord, who fully attained enlightenment.
That we do the ritual of homage, refuges, and precepts. So we'll do that. I'll explain that first, Moon, and then you can ask. I'm a very orthodox kind of chap. I'm a very conservative tradition. I was also a hippie, so I have many angles. Orthodoxy has to be balanced with orthopraxy. Orthodoxy is a set of structures, intellectual and ritual. Orthopraxy is using those structures in a way which is liberating rather than stultifying or alienating or bigoted or, you know, all that business which a religion can get into, unfortunately. So I've undertaken the spiritual life in a very traditional form, and so that's what I try to share. And part of the traditional form of Buddhism, as many of you know, is a formula that begins by paying homage to the Buddha, taking refuge, and then a determination to live by certain moral standards, which we call the five precepts. And it's a ritualized activity that we do with a monastic or a teacher, and the community, a sort of statement, response, statement, response, statement, response. And so just to go through that with you, just for those who might be new to that, the first statement is homage to the Buddha. So right at the end of this chanting, we chanted Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa, homage to the Buddha. And that is, to me, it's a homage both to it's a homage of sense of respect, gratitude, all those wonderful feelings we can have for a historical person, but also it's homage to the possibility of human enlightenment. It's both. So when I think of the Buddha, it's not just a historical person that you have faith in. It's just the very fact that there was a being who realized something profound, had the compassion to share that, and that I have the good fortune to inherit that possibility. So for me, it's a statement of gratitude. It's a statement of optimism, I think. It's a very optimistic thing to think that human beings are not just bad news. If you look at the news, we are not a nice species. But actually, there is a lot of beauty in the human psyche and a lot of beautiful possibilities. So homage to the Buddha for me represents that. So the way the ritual goes is that I would chant Namo Tassa three times. Unfortunately, we don't have the sheets which we could follow, so we'll just have to ad lib. So I will chant Namo Tassa three times, and then you can respond three times. Many of you are familiar with that. And then there's the idea of refuge in Buddhism. And refuge in Buddhism is actually quite hard to understand. The words are simple. I take refuge in the Buddha, Buddhang saranang gacchami. I take refuge in the Dharma, Dhammang saranang gacchami. I take refuge in the Sangha, Sanghang saranang gacchami. And there, the way I've been taught it, there's a kind of two ways to look at it. Buddha as historical person, but Buddha also is that which is wise, is fully awake, and fully present to the way things are. And that's not doctrinal. You can profess any kind of doctrinal viewpoint you want, but the awake mind is not an intellectual position. It's not a cultural thing. It's not Buddhist. It's not Christian. It just is the awake mind. And that's a true refuge. You can't really take refuge in a historical person, because someone might come along, a really good scholar, and tell you, well, he never existed. You know, or, you know, he was actually just, it was all fake, and I can't prove it. So if you said to me, the Buddha never existed, I said, yeah, maybe you're right. But the awake mind, that's always a possibility. Wisdom is always there, isn't it? So it's truly a refuge, and refuge is a sense of safety. When you're really, when you're really awake to the moment, wisdom is functioning, discernment is there. When I'm lost in my views and opinions and habits and so on, wisdom isn't functioning. Usually greed, hatred, and delusion are functioning. So Buddhang Saranang Gacchami, the awake mind. Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, again, it's used in the way I've been taught. And this is just a reflection. You know, you can be presented in different ways. But Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, Dhamma is, you could say, the doctrinal teaching, the orthodox teaching, you could say that. And then you say, whose orthodoxy are you taking? You know, Zen, Theravada, Chinese, Pure Land. Which Theravada are you taking? So you can get a lot of the kind of arguing that way. But what the Dhamma is pointing to is the way things are. The truth of the way things are. And when you really know the truth of the way things are in the present moment, then that's refuge in Dharma. And how are things? Well, they're this way. You know, how what is the Dharma? What is Dharma is but this moment as it is. Very simple. But then we make it complicated through greed, hatred, and delusion. But the Dharma is this moment, awake to, the Buddha is this awakeness to this moment just the way it is. And when you know that, then that's refuge. If I feel, let's say, annoyed that the lights are too light, they're not. You know, I don't like those light bulbs. Right? They're too IKEA for me. You know, they're 250s or something. Right? So I have some kind of aesthetic hang-up. Now, when I see those light, and this is not true, okay? So whoever's recording this, I'm not that neurotic, but. But I look at that and I think, wow, what a cheap light fixture, right? That's the Dharma of whinging, let's say. That's the Dharma of complaining. When I'm awake to that, oh, complaining mind feels this way, and I notice there's something changing, I'm taking refuge in Buddha, knowing Dharma. When I'm not aware of that, and I go to Randy, I say, I'm never coming again until you change those light fixtures. Right. And then he feels guilty. Then I'm taking refuge in whinging, which is not a nice place to be, and complaining. And so it's a very simple principle, Buddha knowing Dharma, but it's actually very, very profound. It's a spiritual kind of statement. It's not doctrinal. You don't have to believe in Buddha to do that. Buddha knowing Dharma, or awake to the way things are. And that's what we practice. Then the refuge in Sangha, Sanghang Saranga Gacchami. Sanghang has a conventional way of being described. So you have the Bhikkhu Sangha, the Bhikkhuni Sangha, the Arya Sangha, different ways that that's described. Sangha means group, so it means community maybe. But you can't really take refuge in other people. Have you ever done that? It's a disaster. They die on you. Or they disappoint you, or they cheat on you, or they call your number and they're right. All kinds of things. But so Sangha, the body of the Sangha, is a kind of conventional way of looking at, well, what does Sangha really represent? It represents virtue, a life well lived, a life of refraining from harming other beings, and doing the utmost we can for the benefit of other beings. So generosity, morality, it's our practice, it's our diligence, it's our patience with the way things are. So I look at it as like it's the doing of the Buddha's recommendations, and something I have to do myself to live a good life, to live a moral life, to try to cultivate wholesome qualities of compassion and generosity, and to refrain from just mouthing off to people because I want to mouth off, and so on and so forth. And that's a refuge too. You know, if I feel like, okay, so the whinging mind comes up, I don't like the light fixtures, and I feel my mind complaining. Oh, complaining feels this way. I'll take refuge in right speech. Right? And my temptation is go to Randy and say, what kind of a place are you running here? That's what my whinging mind wants to say, but my reflections on right speech is speech which is in concord, speech which is truthful, speech which is helpful, speech which is according to Dhamma, speech which is beautiful. And I noticed that this speech pattern is not beautiful. It's coming from a unskillful place, and I take refuge in precepts. I take refuge in right speech. And I don't have the guilt of running Randy down, or the remorse, or the arrogance, or whatever might have come from that. So these refuges are, sometimes people ask, well, what does it mean to be a Buddhist? That's one of the ways we talk about being a Buddhist. Now again, that's not doctrinal, it's a very active kind of principle. The precepts then are an undertaking to try to train the mind in a way of moral impeccability, and it is a training rather than an absolute. So the first precept, I undertake the precept to refrain from killing living beings. So it's a training, right? So let's say I don't have problems with trying to bump off my neighbors. It's not a problem for me. I've never yet thought to murder my neighbors. But I have had murderous thoughts about deer flies. Very murderous thoughts. You're walking in Toronto is a pleasure. No mosquitoes, no deer flies, no ticks. It's really a benign atmosphere. Where I am, there's warfare out there. You're being attacked by all these things. So my impulses of murder come up with these little critters that are trying to suck my blood. And it is, it's, you know, I don't, you know, I deer fly lands on me, I say, oh, may you be well and happy. I don't think that. He said, if you don't get off, I'm going to kill you. So it's an impulse to kill. And I mean, it's very hard to watch that. So I wear a good hat, and if I have to wear a mosquito thing over my face, I do. And then I try not to kill deer flies, try not to kill mosquitoes. If I didn't have that precept, then, well, why not? Why not just follow the impulse to murder? They're only insects. But it's still an impulse to harm, isn't it? And that impulse comes up in other ways. One of the interesting things in the monastery is once we get builders there and they realize where we're at, they'll like, I'll be standing and talking to them, a mosquito will bite them, and they'll go, and they'll look at me. But at least they'll feel guilty. it works a little bit. So just that impulse to harm is balanced by the impulse to compassion and goodness. Second precept, I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. So all the kind of corrupt possibilities of society, you know, like if society is just stealing stuff from the office, everyone's taking reams of computer paper or, you know, just whatever's available and everyone's doing it, is that a good moral standard? No. So impeccability I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. And that's a protection, isn't it? It's a protection for myself and for others, this trust. Ajahn Sumedho, my teacher, who's now lives in Thailand, he was at Wat Nonat Chat and his passport got stolen. You know, nice safe place, monastery. And some other stuff got stolen. And the effect is interesting. The effect is like mistrust, lock the doors. The villagers were very embarrassed. This very famous teacher got you know, ripped off, and they finally found the guy. And he had kind of taken it and burned the passport because it wasn't much use to him. It was just some poor guy that was probably addicted on drugs and getting caught up and so on. But the effect on society and the individual is very bad, isn't it? Very, very bad. So impeccability is that you get a sense of self-worth and self-confidence and so on. I take the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct. So that is the idea of fidelity in relationships and being honest in relationships and also not just following appetites, because the third precept is not just about sexuality, it's about hedonism, really. And a life lived in the pursuit of our appetites is a life which is very distracted, at the very least, and very harmful for the mind, because the mind is always distracted and needing something external. The fourth precept, antique precept, to refrain from speech which is untruthful and harmful. That's a lifetime precept. And this is where you see it's not absolute. You can't, none of us do right speech for more than 2 hours. Yeah, it's really hard not to just dump on someone or run a stupid email or very, very difficult. But you can train. You know, you can train and try to make speech which is in concord, speech is truthful and so on. So it's a reflection and helps us to pause on how we are speaking, communicating. Is it wholesome? Is it unwholesome? And the results are very good, because then you prevent a lot of that remorse and regret and discord in society. I take the precept to refrain from intoxicants and drugs which change consciousness. So sobriety, just living a straight life, being with whatever the mind brings up. That's not to deny the use of drugs for mental illness. That those are all part of our, probably our good karma in our society. But just that way of distracting or altering consciousness in a way of using drugs, we'd say that the undertaking of the precepts, don't do that, that's not skillful. And I know certainly my drug-taking days, it didn't, you know, in the beginning it seemed like I was getting some kind of insights, but afterwards it became an indulgence, and after a while it produced a lot of paranoia. I could see, it was in India and Afghanistan, and there was a lot of chemicals very easy to get, and the results were not good. They weren't results of self-respect or clarity. And for me, at least, it just led to more and more paranoia. It was interesting to watch. So when I took the precepts, it was a great relief, actually. Here's a structure now, which is very helpful. So with all that in mind, we could do the ritual. So the way the ritual is done, I don't know if you're aware of it, usually one of the lay congregation, are you a congregation? I suppose you are, right? The lay sangha asks for the precepts, not that you have to ask me to keep the precepts. You can go for it without me, don't worry about it. But there's a ritual of asking, and then I will present the homage, refuges, and so on, explain it. So Moon, you want to start with that?
Mayam Bhante Tishana Shaham Panchashinani Nichana Vidhyambi Mayam Bhante Tishana Shaham Panchashinani Nichana Tatiyambi Mayam Bhante Tishana Shaham Panchashinani Nichana.
So I'll chant Namo Tassa three times, and then when I'm finished, you please follow. Anyone who wants to do this. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Duttiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Duttiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Duttiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Duttiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Duttiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Duttiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi.
And then I'll do the precepts word by word in the Pali, and then I'll do the English in a whole line. So, Pānātipātā. Vairamani Sikkhapadang Samatiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from killing any living being. Adinadana Vairamani Sikkhapadang Samatiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given.
I undertake the precepts of
Kamesu. Michachara,
Veramani,
Sikapadang,
Samatiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct. Musawada,
Veramani,
Sikapadang,
Samatiyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from wrong and harmful speech.
I undertake the precept to refrain from wrong and harmful speech.
Suramiraya,
Maja,
Pamadatana, Veramani,
Sikapadang,
Samatiyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from intoxicating drinks and drugs which lead to carelessness. And this is my line, Imani Panchasikapadani Silena Sukatingyanti Silena Boka Sampata Silena Niputingyanti Tasama Silang Visota Ye. And you do sadhu three times. There you go. You're in the soup now.